Welcome to Nobel Conversations. In this episode, Josh Angrist and Hito Imbens sit down with Isaiah Andrews to discuss how their research was initially received and how they responded to criticism.
At the time, did you feel like sort of you were onto something? Like you felt like this was the beginning of sort of a whole line of work that you felt like was going to be important, or?
Not so much that it was a whole line of work, but certainly I felt like, wow, this is...
We proved something people didn't know before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was worth knowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going back kind of to the... compared to my job market paper or something, no, I felt this was actually... this was a very clear, crisp result.
Mm-hmm. But there were definitely... There was a mixed reception, and, you know, I don't think anybody said that, oh, well, you know, this is already something known, you know, which is the nightmare scenario for a researcher, where you think you've discovered something and then somebody else, you know, says, oh, I knew that. But there definitely was a need to convince people that this was worth knowing, that instrumental variables estimates a causal effect for compliers.
Yeah, but so you know, even though it took a long time to convince kind of a bigger audience, in some sense, even fairly quickly, the reception was pretty good among a small group of people. I mean, Gary kind of clearly liked it a lot from the beginning. And I remember, because at that point, Josh had left for Israel, but I remember explaining it to Dom Rubin. And he was like, yeah, you know this really is something here.
Not right away, though.
No,
it took Don took some convincing. Yeah. By the time you got to Don, there had been some back and forth with him in correspondence, actually.
Yeah. But then I remember at some point getting a call or email from him saying that he was sitting at the airport in Rome and kind of looking at that paper and thinking, yeah, no, actually,
there's something there.
You guys are onto something.
Right. We were happy about that. So, yeah. But that took longer than I think you remember.
Yeah.
It wasn't right away.
Yes.
Because I know that I was back in Israel by the time that happened.
Yes.
I left for Israel in the summer of... So I was only at Harvard for 2 years. We had that 1 year... It is remarkable. I mean, that 1 year was so fateful for us.
Yes.
You know, and I think we understood there was something good happening, but maybe we didn't think it was life-changing, you know, only in retrospect.
As you said, it sounds like a small group of people were initially quite receptive, perhaps took some time for a broader group of people to come around to sort of seeing the late framework as a valuable way to look at the world. Right. I guess in over the course of that, did you sort of, were there periods where you thought maybe the people saying this wasn't a useful way to look at the world were right? Did you get discouraged? Sort of how did you think about it?
I don't think I was discouraged, but the people who were saying that were smart people, you know, well-informed econometricians, sophisticated readers. And I think the substance of the comment was, this is sort of not what econometrics is about. Econometrics, as you know, was sort of being transmitted at that time, was about structure. There was this idea that there's structure in the economy, and it's our job to discover it. And what makes it structure is it's essentially invariant. And so we're saying, you know, in the late theorem, that every instrument produces its own causal effect, which is in contradiction to that to some extent. And so that was where the tension was. People didn't want to give up that idea.
Yeah, I remember kind of once sort of people started arguing kind of more vocally against that, it never really bothered me that much. It seemed, you know, it was sort of clear that we had a result there, and it became somewhat controversial, but sort of controversial in a good way. It was clear that people felt they had to come out against it.
I think we think it's good now.
We might not have loved it at the time. I remember being somewhat the more upset. There was some dinner where someone said, no, that paper with Josh, that was doing a disservice to the profession.
Yeah, he definitely had some reactions like that.
And so that at some level, that may be indicative of the culture in general in economics at the time. I thought back later about it. If that happened now, if I was a senior person sitting in that conversation, I would call that out because it really was not appropriate.
But it wasn't so bad. I think the criticism is
no. This was a dinner.
It wasn't completely misguided. It was maybe wrong.
No, but saying crazy. You can say that paper is wrong or that it's, but it's saying that it's a disservice to the profession, that's not really
personal.
That's yes, and doing that not to me, but in front of my senior colleagues.
But nobody was saying the result was wrong. And I remember also some of the comments were thought provoking. So we had some negative reviews, I think, on the average causal response paper.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you know, these compliers, you can't figure out who they are. Right? So it's one thing to say you're estimating the effect of treatment on the treated or something like that. You can tell me who's treated. You know, people in the CPS, you know, you can't tell me who's a complier. So that was a legitimate challenge.
That's totally fair. And it's, I can see why that part made people a little uneasy and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, at the same time, because it showed that you couldn't really go beyond that. It was a very useful thing to realize. Mm-hmm. I remember kind of on the day we got to the key result, that I was thinking, wow, you know, this is sort of as good as it gets. Here we actually have an insight, but it clearly.
And we had to sell it at some point. Yeah, so for quite a few years we had to sell it.
Yeah.
And it's proven to be quite useful. I don't think we understood that it would be so useful at the time.
No. I did feel like early on that this was a substantial insight.
Yeah, we did something. But I
did not think goals were there.
Yeah. I don't think we were aiming for the Nobel.
We were very happy to get that note in Econometrica.
Are there factors or ways of approaching problems that lead people to be better at like recognizing the good stuff and taking the time to do it as opposed to dismissing it?
Sometimes I think it's helpful. If you're trying to convince somebody that you have something useful to say and maybe they don't, you know, speak your language, you might need to learn their language.
Yes,
That's what we did with Dawn. We figured out how to, I remember we had a very hard time explaining the exclusion restriction to Dawn. Maybe rightfully so. I think Hito and I eventually figured out that it wasn't formulated very clearly, you know, and we came up with a way to do that in the potential outcomes framework that I think kind of worked for the three of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it worked for the bigger literature, but yeah. I think what you're saying there is exactly right. You kind of need to figure out how, not just kind of say, okay, well, I've got this language and this works great and I've got to convince someone else to use that language. You could first figure out what language they're using and then only then can you try to say, well, but here you're thinking of it this way, but kind of that's actually a pretty hard thing to do. You get someone from a different discipline, convincing them that kind of two junior faculty in a different department actually have something to say to you. That takes a fair amount of effort. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wrote Dawn a number of times.
Yeah,
fairly long letters. I remember thinking this is worth doing. You know, that if I could convince Dawn, that would sort of validate the framework to some extent.
Mm-hmm. I think both you and Dawn were a little bit more confident that you were right.
Well, we used to argue a lot, and you would sometimes referee those. Yeah, that was fun.
I remember. You know,
it wasn't hurtful.
I remember getting a little testy once. We had lunch in the faculty club, and we're talking about the draft lottery paper.
Yeah.
We were talking about never takers, kind of people who wouldn't serve in the military, irrespective of whether they were getting drafted. And you or Don said something about shooting yourself in the foot as a way of getting out of the military, and that maybe the exclusion restriction for never takers wasn't working. And then whoever said that, the other one was going, well, yes, you could do that, but why would you want to shoot yourself in the foot? And it just got a little there.
I usually go for moving to Canada for my
example.
That's
a good one. Can't be good for your
yes.
Exactly. But things are tricky. I mean, I get students coming from computer science and they want to do things on causal inference. And it takes a huge amount of effort kind of to figure out how they're actually thinking about a problem and whether there's something there. Mm-hmm. And so now over the years, I've gotten a lot more appreciation for the fact that Don was actually willing to kind of, you know, it took it a while, but he did engage kind of first with Josh and then with both of us and rather than kind of dismissing and say, okay, well, you know, I can't figure out what these guys are doing. It's probably just not really that interesting.
Everybody always wants to figure out quickly. You know, you want to save time and you want to save your brain cells for other things. Yep. So, you know, the fastest route to that is to figure out why you should dismiss something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know,
exactly.
I don't need to spend time on this.
If you'd like to watch more Nobel Conversations, click here. Or if you'd like to learn more about econometrics, check out Josh's Mastering Econometrics series. If you'd like to learn more about Hedo, Josh, and Isaiah, check out the links in the description.